The topic tonight is a creation theology, a Jewish creation theology for the 21st century. Creation was a neglected idea in Jewish thought throughout the 20th century. You read the great Jewish thinkers of the 20th century, ranging from the generation of Buber and Rosenzweig, writing in Germany in the 20s and 30s, to Heschel and Soloveitchik, to the next generation, the post-Six-Day War generation of David Hartman, Irving Greenberg, and so on. They deal with a host of interesting issues, the theologians of Judaism. Richard Rubinstein, the famous radical Jewish theologian after Auschwitz, they deal with a host of very important issues, but almost nobody talks about creation. Why? If you read the great classical Jewish theologies, the Jewish theologies of the Middle Ages, whether the rationalists, Maimonides in particular, or the mystics, the Zohar in particular, they all know that theology has to begin with creation. The Maimonides spends a great deal of time with the principles of Aristotelian physics to show you the world must be created, because without creation there are no miracles. There's no prophecy. And so creation is the foundation of everything. For the Zohar, the whole story is how God is constantly repeating the act of creation. Creation happens with the flow of divine energy into the world in every moment. But the modern Jewish theologians don't talk about creation. In general, I think it's fair to say theology wasn't the big thing the Jews were doing in the 20th century. We were too busy surviving. We were too busy surviving the transition from Europe to Israel and America. We're too busy surviving the Holocaust. We're too busy building a state. There were lots of things we had to deal with. Theology wasn't very much on the mind of the Jewish people in this century. If they did ask theological questions, there were two. Number one, providence. Where was God? How did God let it happen? That was the big theological question on the minds of Jews. And second, I think the question of authority. Did God really give the Torah? Did God really come out and say those things, demand that we do these things? If God didn't, why should we do them? What's the source of authority that replaces a literal childlike belief in revelation? Those, if there were any theological questions, those were the ones. Creation was on the back burner. Why? This mic too we want. We don't have enough mics. Higher, higher. Okay. Higher and higher. That's another story. Why was creation on the back burner? I think there was a certain embarrassment about the fact that we have a creation story that we love, that we revere, that's ours, and that we don't believe. We raise our cups on Friday night, I do too, happily so, and say, Vayechulu Hashamayim V'aretz V'chol Tzva'am, heaven and earth were finished on the seventh day, and all their hosts. We love that story. We tell that story. We live around that story. Shabbos, which is the most essential defining rite of the Jewish people, is all built around that story. So we continue to tell it, but our relationship to it is not one of belief. It's something else. It's affection, it's tradition, it's ritual, it's lots of things. But most of us don't believe that story. Now, there were occasionally people, the late Lubavitcher Rebbe got up and said, no, the world is really 5,700 and whatever it was, 42 or 65 years old. And God put the fossils there to test our faith, and God gave us carbon dating to test our faith. And all of us to the left of Lubavitch sort of smiled and said, isn't that cute? The Lubavitcher Rebbe says the world is 5,700 years old. Of course, he went to college too. You wonder exactly how he could do it. But that was his role, but the rest of us, of course, didn't take that seriously. We are not the kinds of people who conduct the Scopes trial. We are not the kinds of people who stand behind those school boards in Kansas and say, you can't teach evolution. Our kids go to college. We want our kids to go to medical school, right? So that's who we are. We consider ourselves urbane, sophisticated people. We believe in science. So the idea that we would stand up against science was totally out of character for most modern Jews. Nevertheless, the question is still somehow there. What do we do about this question of creation? It was also, I think, that the problem of creation in the 20th century didn't differentiate us from anybody else. We like to talk about those things that make Judaism different. Why does Judaism have a better solution than some other tradition? This is a question that faced all religious people. Listen, traditional religion fought two great battles over the course of the entire 20th century. The battle against evolution and the battle against biblical criticism. It decisively lost both of those. In some ways, that's what this book is about. How do you create an intellectually honest theology, Jewish faith, for the 21st century, realizing that both of those great 20th century agitating issues are resolved, and not resolved in favor of what traditional religion tried to claim. I still had teachers who would sort of mock biblical criticism. Well, they don't really understand the Bible, and so on. But I think that era, outside of a certain corner of ultra-Orthodoxy, has more or less passed. But for the 21st century, you can't get away without dealing with theology, without dealing with creation. Creation is the great question for the 21st century for an obvious reason. The most important thing religion will have to do in this century is be part of the movement of humanity toward a different attitude toward the planet on which we live and the resources we consume. I personally believe that by the middle of this century we will face a terrible ecological crisis, and it won't be a matter of discussion anymore whether it's true or not. The only discussion will be how terribly has it been aggravated by the political irresponsibility and the moral irresponsibility of our leadership in the first part of this century. We are going to be called upon to change our behavior in very significant ways. And when I say we, I mean the entire human race. How are we going to do that? How are we going to get people to consume less? To not insist that all the creature comforts that we live with and that overconsume resources are things we have a right to and can't manage to live without. And yet, if we don't change them somehow, we as a species may not survive. This planet may not survive as fit for habitation for higher species altogether. It will not be done. Whether we will succeed in changing that behavior, I don't know. I think I'm probably glad for the fact that I won't be around to see the worst possible effects of it. Though I worry about my grandchildren, of course, now that I have them. But I can tell you that it won't be done without the active involvement of religion and religious communities. To create a great shift in human behavior will require a great shift in our mythic understanding of who we are, how we got here, and what we're doing here, what human life is all about. And the only vehicle we have for addressing that for large bodies of human beings is the vehicle of religion. So I think that all religious leaders and all religious communities are going to be called upon somehow in the course of this century to deal with that, to use religion as a vehicle for those changes in human behavior. And that's going to mean, of course, going to the question of creation. But it's not just a, shall we call it, a political issue question. What do we religious people have to offer if, in fact, the battle against evolution and the battle against biblical criticism have both been resolved in the other direction from that which traditional religious authorities might have hoped for? Do we have anything to say anymore? We apparently do. Because even though both of those issues have been resolved in the direction that leads away from religion, religion, at least in this country, is a greater factor in social life, in the inner lives of Americans, than anybody would have predicted 50 years ago. 50 years ago, we still assumed the predominant myth of modernity was about the ongoing process of secularization, and that the pockets of religious loyalty were shrinking as people became more educated and more modernized. They would eventually dry up into isolated corners of our society. Now we know the opposite is true, that religion is growing as a force, that all kinds of religion, every variety of religion, from the most liberal and interfaith and open-minded to the most rigid and dogmatic and fundamentalist, are all thriving in the context of a society that sees itself very deeply as a religiously shaped society. So, we have to ask, in that context, what do we have to say?